throwing tantrums, looking to a female to lead me, complaining that the females are not leading me. Maybe that's why. I'm accustomed to a situation where men know what the hell they're supposed to be doing. I'm accustomed to a situation where men take responsibilities for their actions. That's the situation that I am accustomed to. I'm not accustomed to a situation where men are looking to be led. I'm accustomed to a situation where men are looking to be leaders. That's what I'm accustomed to. And you better get accustomed to that too. Because what we witnessed here last night was shameful. It was absolutely disgraceful. And for everybody who didn't hear last night's broadcast, it's on my YouTube channel. You can go to youtube.com/theblackauthority and you can listen to it for yourselves. You can listen to it for yourselves. I have tried to make it a situation where people understand that as men, we're not going to gain anybody's respect by talking dumb, by begging and mewling for mercy. How are you supposed to get respected like that? We started off the broadcast with us talking about men wanting to get credit for potential and how women should not accept that, and I'll be damned as soon as we let the guys start calling in, what happened? I'm not going to lower the bar because you're having a tough time. I expect you to get strong enough to get over the bar. I'm not going to lower it for you. I am not going to say that we are going to change things up and start accepting and validating your weakness. You see, the best coaches are the ones who grade the hardest. Those are the best coaches. The ones who grade the hardest are the ones who uphold the highest standards. You want to know a pathetic coach? A pathetic coach is the one who lets the players tell him how to run the team. Because the player is never going to demand as much of himself as you will. The player is always going to try to figure out how to make the workload as light for himself as he can because he thinks that his job is to be there for 2 hours. He does not understand that his job is to leave there better than when he showed up. Understands that. The players, however, usually don't. Mona, where you are from out there in California, I have to say, where black malehood is concerned, based on what we witnessed last night, it's absolutely disgraceful. It is absolutely disgraceful. And I said it last night, but I understand what you and Stephanie are talking about. When I get callers like that, when I get people like that, that are looking for women to lead them and looking for women to validate them. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your access code to the BlackChannel.net radio program. If we have not made you hurt your little feelings too much, because for the black men who called in last night, with the exception of only about two of you, that was a bad night last night, Mona. And do you think that they actually understand how bad they looked?
No, I actually think that they were displaying their manhood. They were, you know, challenging you, and you were wrong, and they were right. You know, Jason, has gotten to the point that every time I hear someone say that they're from California, I sit over here with my fingers crossed. And I'm saying, please, please don't embarrass California again. And they have been doing it consistently for, what, the last month and a half here? It's embarrassing.
Is it getting to the point now you are just relinquishing the idea of expecting leadership from black men in general?
You know, I don't believe in hope. I believe in work. And I don't want to give up on my black men. However, they make it hard for you. They make it very hard for you. You know, you're supposed to be able to work with a person, but the majority of them are not workable, and they really are delusional and think that they are. And it's the women that have a problem. I was listening to that first gentleman that was trying to send us off to Singapore and how he opened it, how he opened up by saying, you know, he was well-traveled, you know, and he gave himself a lot of credit before he dropped that bomb on us. And when he said what he said, I'm like, oh, my goodness. So he tried to cover it up. You know, I've been in the military. I've been here, there, and everywhere. And you still didn't have any common sense. You and then the next part. Nobody has given us a chance to develop ourselves. And then the next caller, I'm 6 foot, 225 pounds. I look intimidating, but I was scared about a Confederate flag. Caller, I don't know if he was drunk, high, crazy, deranged, or what. Just all disrespectful and rude. Yeah. And they were talking to you as a man. So how do you think they would talk to us if we didn't fall for what they were speaking on? We didn't fall for what they were talking about. And you're trying to lead me? No. And then it makes you wonder, well, it makes me wonder as a 53-year-old woman, what women are filing for this, because I said time and time again, men only do our they only do what they have been successful at doing. So they're speaking, those conversations have been working for them some kind of way. And then they come on the black channel and we're like, no way, we're not going for that. And they get their feelings hurt. I come from men that if they had a problem, they weren't ready to, you know, tell you all the time. They solved it. They handled it. Every once in a while, they let you in on what's going on. I came from a line of men that were problem solvers. They never alluded to the fact that anything that was going on, they could not handle. Not to say that a man, you know, shows a sign of weakness if he lets you in on, you know, what's going on in his life, but when they do it more than women, there's a problem. When your woman is stronger than you, there's a problem. When your woman is out here trying to make things happen and you're not, there's a problem. It is so embarrassing to hear my black brothers speak the way they do. And then they're trying to convince you of that foolishness. That was awful.
How much blame or how much emphasis should we put on what's happening with females? That these are mostly black males, mostly, not all, though, to be totally honest with you. Here's one part where that comes into play. You have individuals who were raised by both parents talking like that. Ladies, you need a man in your home. And I posted about this last night after the broadcast. You need a man in your home. You need a husband in your home. And your husband needs to be a man. Sorry, gay marriage folk. You need a man in your home who is going to demonstrate to your son and deals with situations. You need a man who's going to show your son that. Not a baby daddy. That boy needs to see a man in that home and see what a man is supposed to do and how he's supposed to react and how he's supposed to respond from the moment that that man gets out of bed to the moment that that man goes back to it again. Component that I think is missing. What do you think, Mona?
That is a key component to what is missing, but what is a man to them? What is the role model of a man? When they're out and about, they're running around with all these males, I'm sorry, that are considered to be men. They don't know what a man is. Because a man doesn't know what a man is to show them what a man is. So if all I am measuring is a different level of knuckleheads, who becomes the best knucklehead? Where do I find these leadership qualities if I don't know what they are? At some point in time, a woman knows what a man is not. She has a vision, or it might be a fantasy. Some of those fantasies are correct. Some of them are not. At some point, we know you're not a man. I don't have the whole thing, but what you're exhibiting, you can't lead me. I can't follow you over that cliff. I can't put my life in your hands. When they come across you, you're firm with them because a man is supposed to be firm. And you show them, and you tell them to show no fear because a man is not supposed to show no fear. They really don't know what you're talking about. Because they've modeled themselves around the males in their lives that they thought were exhibiting manhood, and it was all incorrect. And that's a big problem. If their role models are rappers and I don't know what else is out here, to wear a turn that on, and they come on the Black Channel and you're like, no. They don't know what to do. They haven't been exhibiting manhood. But somebody is telling them that they are man.
Well, you know what isn't happening? They don't have somebody telling them prove it. Black males today are saying a bunch of garbage and taught to say a bunch of mess, but they never heard anybody demand that their mother, if they're raised by single mothers, they never had anybody demand that their mother prove the garbage that she was saying. And these males are not being required to prove the mess that they're saying either. Everybody just gets to say things. Nobody has to prove anything. Everybody just gets to say it, though. I'll say it anyway, and I'll just keep talking. I'll talk over you if I need to. I'll just keep talking because I don't have to prove anything. If I just talk, if I just want to get heard, and if I can get heard, well, that's as good as telling the truth, isn't it? I mean, I got heard. Then you realize that this isn't really about the truth anymore. This is about how much attention can you get. Grown men were willing to sell their doggone souls for attention. And I'm not interested in joining up with black males who want attention. I don't do this because I want people to concentrate on the damn ego boost. I do this because I want us to concentrate on power, wealth, and influence. But you can't get us there if your goal is going to be boost your own ego by telling yourself things or getting an audience to hear what you have to say. I don't want anybody to sit up here and call up and, oh, let me listen to what I have to say. Damn what you have to say. Do you have some proof behind that? Can we execute anything that you just said? Well, yeah, you can if you turn the world upside down and if you move to Singapore and Hong Kong and Dubai in the summertime. What the hell? And this is why most black males get on the internet complaining about the kind of woman they have and dreaming about the kind of woman they want, but never actually getting to have the kind of woman they're dreaming about. That's why. See, I speak to people about real world things. I talk to you about what's actionable and what isn't. I don't take a look at your motives. I could give a damn what your motives are. Your motives are your own. Your results are really the only thing I look at. If you want to get money so that you can chase hoes around the world, well, you know what? That builds power, wealth, and influence for black people on a group level, so be it. I don't care what your motivation is for getting it. But on the other hand, it just seems, if about that women thing, if that's going to be your motivation, it seems to me pretty stupid that you would say that that's your motivation and then you do everything humanly imaginable to avoid getting there. You do everything that a human being can possibly conjure up to avoid ever seeing that happen. The reason why most of your con men today, brothers, have got more respect than most black men do is because at least the con men can point to a record of accomplishment somewhere. At least they can point to that. Black males have this handout mentality. That what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can get somebody to give me respect. Like my mama is expecting somebody to give her a man and give her a decent standard of living. I'm going to see if I can get somebody to give that to me. No, I haven't actually done anything to earn that respect. I just want to see if I can get somebody to drop it off for me. Can I get that? I don't have any facts or figures to give. I don't have any information. I did see a documentary. It was made by some guy named Tariq. Living Colors, Blank Colors, Technicolors, something like that. It was amongst the hundreds of thousands of documentaries that were made about black socioeconomics. Hundreds of thousands. And then you wonder why TV shows like Scandal are made. Then you wonder why we have to suffer the indignities of Scandal, and now they want to make Shonda Rhimes is back at it again. I wonder what white man the black female would be chasing on this TV show. You wonder why we have to suffer those indignities. We have to suffer them because we as men are not doing what men are supposed to be doing. And I'm not giving any free passes here. A coach does not look at his team and say that I expect you to act like men tomorrow. He puts it on you right now. And he expects you to behave in that manner today. We expect you to behave in that manner today. But part of it, I think, Mona, is that I don't believe that they actually ever expect that anybody is ever going to call them to account for what they do. I think they believe that they'll be called to account for what they say, but that nobody will ever act that. I think that most black males spend their time basically opening their mouths on the assumption that, well, I'll never actually have to live up to anything I'm saying anyway. I can talk because everything is a hypothetical. I will never be allowed to actually act on any of this. Everything will be a hypothetical. Everything. And I think that they grow up, I think that these are a generation of males who are actually relieved and happy and prefer a situation where they can complain about white supremacy, complain about poverty, complain about what they lack, because it gives them the ability to say, okay, respect me. Don't just disrespect me out the gate, but I don't have to contribute or accomplish anything to get the respect that I'm demanding. I think that they are actually making a point now where they say, you know what? The good news is I've created a situation for myself where I am not actually going to be obligated, or no one's ever going to actually require me to live up to anything. Talking about potential. I think they're actually living relieved, or at least living under the assumption that I'm never going to do any of this, that they are actually, and every day they are preferring the situation to be that as long as I'm down, nobody will ever actually call me out and say, okay, you need to do X, Y, Z to continue getting respected.
Exactly. And I'm going to have to blame my sisters as well. Because if you're co-signing this foolishness, when they want to run across a woman like me that will say prove it, they don't have to deal with me because they got 10, 15, 20 other women that they can run to and run that game on, and they'll accept it. So as you're asking the men to raise their bar, I'm asking the women to raise their bar too. We co-sign a lot of this stuff. We hear things that men are talking out the side of their neck, and we know he's lying. And again, because he gives us some attention, because women are attention whores themselves. They want attention. They need somebody to validate that they're pretty, or they, you know, they need that validation. They accept the foolishness. So good people don't get with good people. And by the time you really are in the presence of a good man or woman, you blow it because you've been ingrained with all the foolishness. You don't even know how to distinguish a person in your life. You don't, because they've been getting away with it, and if they run across an obstacle, they'll turn left because she's not going to go for it, but she, and she will. And then we have two raggedy people, because you're absolutely correct. We represent each other. And if my man's raggedy, I'm raggedy. If his woman is raggedy, he's raggedy. We are supposed to be holding each other up and making sure we both are accountable for excellence. We don't let each other fall. We don't let each other just say anything. Not on the Black Channel. We don't do that. We don't cut people off. We don't talk over people. We don't talk foolishness. We sit and listen. We admit that, okay, I made a mistake. Okay, I never thought of it that way. Okay, my thinking process is wrong. We will argue you down knowing that we're wrong. And I guess that makes you feel like a man or a woman when you do that. You're never thinking. You're digging yourself deeper in the hole of foolishness. These past 2 months, I'm like, wow. But it's good that they're calling in. It gives us a gauge of exactly what's going on out there. You don't even have to assume anymore because you're hearing it. You know, we talk about stereotypes and they stereotype us wrong, but actually they're not. And it's the ones that have been calling in here recently that make it bad for everybody else. And we definitely have to separate from those people. They want to call in and get some help, and they're willing to change and willing to man up and woman up. We encourage that. But if you're going to keep with that foolishness, we have to separate from them because they're keeping us down. And I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want any other person to look at me and say, oh, that's a black woman and she's ratchet. She's this, she's that, she's that. Even before they even get to know me. Because I've experienced it time after time. We have a lot of work to do. We do.
Well,
sometimes, I'm sorry.
In football and college athletics, college and the pros, actually, they have a lot of different coaches. Everybody knows about the head coach and the assistant head coach and the offensive coach and the defensive coach. I mean, they got coaches for everything. You only got one quarterback, but you got coaches for every damn thing. But, you know, there's also a type of coach that most people do not know about, unless you're into football and whatnot, and into the training of it. They've even got coaches for training. One of them is called a strength coach. Now, fails and whatnot out there, unless you really play football, you don't know what a strength coach is, but is what they call them a strengthening and conditioning coach. Now, sometimes they may refer to them as coordinators, but he is the strength and conditioning coach. And it means just that. His job is to oversee your strengthening and your conditioning. That's his job. The head coach and the assistant coach, they just have to assume you're in tip-top shape. It's the strength and conditioning coach's job to make sure that you actually are. And as black people, we do not act as the strength and conditioning coach for each other. If somebody does, we respond resentfully. We don't want anyone to make us a stronger person. Just accept me as I am. And this is how we have so many bloated, obese, fat black women. And the first thing that falls out of their donut-munching mouth is, well, you should accept me like I am. Not, you know what, you're right, the diabetes sucks. Mona, I mean, 10 years ago, in my late 20s, I was meeting black females who were so fat and obese that they needed CPAP machines. In their late 20s and needing CPAP machines. Now, for those of you who don't know what a CPAP is, that is for sleep apnea.
Right.
Sleep apnea is a fat person's disease. We use the word disease. I mean, there are a few people who may suffer apneatic episodes who are not necessarily overweight, but they are the exception. They're not the rule. Most people who need a CPAP machine is because they are so fat that when they lay on their backs, that's why snoring is dangerous. Over time, that can become a dangerous, life-threatening condition. Because what it means is you're not getting enough oxygen. That's why your body is forcing you to snore, because it's trying to suck in more air, because you are not giving it enough, because your fat is strangling your neck. You got fat that is building up around your neck, fat that is building up on your chest, and that's pushing down on your lungs. You're not able to breathe. So those two things together comprise making apneatic episodes. Grown women in their late 20s with CPAP machines. I don't know what kind of guy you have to be to accept. Yes, I do. You have to be dusty and broken raggedy. But as a grown black man, you're not supposed to be accepting that. Then you have females sit up here and tell you that they don't want anybody to say to them anything about their weight. At that point, you don't need to have anybody talking to you at all. But as it stands, as black men, you've developed a habit of settling. And what I'm saying is no more settling. If they're not coming to the table right to begin with, you don't settle. But at the same time, you do not turn down when other people are doing what's in your best interest. We need strength and conditioning coaches. As black men and black women with each other, we need to be, and we need to have no tolerance for those among us who do not want to get stronger. Individuals who are bringing you pipe dreams and unrealistic fantasy worlds, they don't actually want to see you get stronger. They don't actually want to see that. And when you become resentful of somebody saying, I want to see you at your best, that's when you know you're really messed up. I'm not for it. You know, at the point that I'm at right now, I mean, it's that would be like me, you know, meeting Tyler Perry and Tyler Perry saying, here's what you can do to tighten up your filmmaking game. And then I get upset. Well, the man is telling you the truth. Well, he's talking about these expensive cameras. Well, he's telling you that you've made one documentary and it's time to step your game up. You see, a good coach calls his players to a higher standard. A good coach does not sit up here and accept mediocrity from his players. That's not what a good coach does. A good coach expects the best from his players. A good coach expects the best from his players. And when you are part of the black team, I'm going to expect the best from you. I'm going to expect the best, and I'm going to expect everything. And that's going to start with men acting like men. I'm going to go ahead and go to the phone lines here now. Let me take caller from 910. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Black first, Jason and Mona. Stephanie from North Carolina.
Hello, Stephanie. You're going to get closer to your phone now.
Can you hear me better now?
Well, I want everybody to be able to hear you, so I know you have us on speaker. If you're going to be on speaker, you need to make sure you're closer to that, because remember, the further back you get, the more it's going to reverberate. So, and people who are listening over Ustream or whatever may not be able to hear you quite as well as we do.
Okay, is it better?
Yeah, go ahead, Steph.
Okay. I wanted to, you mentioned the fact about holding each other accountable and actually listening to other people when they try to tell you what you're doing is wrong or try to, I guess, improve on what you're doing. And when you said that, it made me think about people I try to correct, and then it made me think about things people try to tell me and my standpoint on it. And I don't know. It just makes me think, because, you know, right now, last week and then this week, people have been telling me, well, let me say this, the older people have been telling me to go ahead and get my PhD, which I really don't want to get. But then when I look at what I tell my sisters about, you know, who they see or, you know, what not to do and what they need to be doing, then it's kind of like I feel like I'm giving those people the same that my sisters give me. So it's kind of like, where is that line between, okay, maybe you should listen to this person, to no, don't listen to them.
The line is going to be based on what your goals are. If your goal is proper and mature, then you make your decisions based upon that. A PhD might not be the best thing for you. For example, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, was in school for computer programming, and he left early. And now he's got billions of dollars and can do whatever he wants. In other words, the degree became obsolete. He took a shortcut to getting where he wanted to go. That degree was not going to give him anything that he wasn't about to already get. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And that's my whole thing.
It's one thing if you're saying, I don't want to listen to people because I've got a better way, or I don't want to listen to people because I'm taking a shortcut. If you've got it in your mind that what you're doing is taking a shortcut, that's probably where you're messing up at. If you are saying, I want to do this because it's the easiest thing for me to do, that's one thing. But if you're saying I want to do this because this is the easiest way for me to accomplish, or the best way for me to accomplish my goal, now that's different. So that's that is the estimation that you have to make.
Justin, can I ask you a question?
No.
Oh, God, you sound like my father every time you do that. Do you think that most people get caught up with diplomas and, you know, the paper, and it makes them feel better than somebody else, regardless if they use it or not, regardless if they get a job in that field? Do you think that paperwork gives them this false ego that I've achieved more than you, and they throw that in your face like that?
I think that where people make their biggest mistake is that people come into situations with no plan, and that they use their diplomas and documentation as a way compensating for the fact that they don't actually have a plan. Let's be honest, most people end up going to college because their parents told them that they had to, not because it was actually what they thought was best, but because that's what their parents told them to do. So they end up doing that, not because it was what they wanted in life, but because it was what they were compelled to do. And this made them feel like, well, I'm not a loser. When you start sitting up here and saying, you know what, let me find out here, what's the best, what do I want to do with my life, and what's the best way to achieve it? When you do that, things turn out different. But most people go to school to get a degree because they are trying to compensate, or because they don't actually have a plan, so that degree is a stopgap. It is a way of occupying their time until they come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, because that's going to take up so much time of your life. That degree better actually be what you want to do. If it isn't, it's about to take up a whole chunk of time that you will never get back. So, yes, I think that a lot of people get it for status and titles, but I think they get the status and the title, or should I say they get the title, because they don't actually have a plan. They don't actually have a life goal. So let me pursue this goal, let me pursue this degree until I come up with one.
Yeah, because you can be talking to somebody and they'll be like, I went to college, I have a degree, I did this, and you're working at Walmart, so what did you tell me that for? Mm-hmm. Are you saying that, you know, you're better than me because I'm a hairstylist and you have degrees and I'm making about the same money as you, you're a teacher, I make about as what you make, so what are you actually trying to, you know, put off on me?
Exactly. I think it is used in order to try to make someone look better, and you should, and I think, because like I said, the older people are the ones that are like, yeah, you should go ahead and do that. You already got your master's, you need to go ahead and knock it on out. And it's like, I think it's kind of like for them to have bragging rights a little bit, you know, because it's like, oh, look at Stephanie, she's got this, and she's doing this, and this, and this, and I think it kind of compensates, because, I mean, they, you know, how I think earlier TBA was saying how, you know, if somebody else has it, whatnot, they can kind of tell you, but, I mean, they don't necessarily have degrees or anything like that. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, look at my niece or look at whoever, and she's doing this and she's doing that. So they can tell their friends that, you know, she got it all together or whatnot, and that's my family, you know?
Exactly. I was the first one in my family to open a business. And although I was told not to do it, when the doors open, here comes all the family. Here comes my father with his mm-hmm. people and his homeboys around. And I was like, but you told me not to do this. So that causes a lot of confusion. And I have to agree with Jason when he says, if you don't have a plan, you've just wasted your time. And now you have these enormous student loans that you can't get from up under. And I want to say this. We have to get, okay, we're all human beings and we have feelings, but we have to get past not wanting corrective criticism. We have to get past that. So there was a time when I grew up that an older person could say, come here, let me holler at you for a minute. Come here, let me sit down, let me talk to you. You know, and you were respectful, and you listened to that person. And sometimes you got something out of it, and sometimes you didn't. But you just weren't, oh, let me tell you, and, you know, just keep on talking back and being very rebellious and not trying to listen or giving that person respect. And we have to get past that if we say that we want to be the best. We have to get past that. It feels bad when you think that you, but it feels bad when you think you know something and somebody corrects you. But when you humble yourself and you listen to that information, you should feel grateful that that person took out time out of their day to be like, no, let me correct you on that. That's a person that cares. That's a person that you really actually need in your corner. But because of our egos, we'll shun them away. We'll put that aside to keep up the foolishness. And something is wrong with that picture. Go ahead, Stephanie.
I was just going to say, I mean, but I think the communication definitely goes both ways, and that, you know, yeah, you said your piece, but let me say my piece, you know, because it's like, oh, you should do this and this. Well, I'm not going to do this because of X, Y, Z. And so, and yeah, I think it just goes both ways, and I think the older generation needs to listen just as much as the younger generation, because how are we going to connect the dots when it's just so much discord, like, among everybody?
I wasn't speaking, like, in, you know, specifically to your problem. I'm just speaking
in general.
Lack of respect. Yeah. The lack of respect, whether it comes from young or old. I'm 53.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at the knowledge that Jason has. I'm getting better, and he's a younger man. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It's right. It's right. And you have to be humble enough to stay open to be able to receive the greatness that somebody is trying to instill in you, no matter where it comes from. But we don't recognize greatness in front of us because we're surrounded by foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue is that for older folk, they believe that a degree is tantamount to success. It's guaranteed success. And the bigger your degree, the more success you have.
Yeah.
For most older black folk, you have to understand, for most older black folk, they surrendered to white supremacy a long time ago. They're a bunch of toothless tigers. Hell, they're not even tigers. They're just a bunch of toothless hippos. They weren't, even if they had teeth, they wouldn't be dangerous. And for you to talk about something other than having a job, when you're a black person talking to older black folk about doing something other than working for white people, you might as well have just said, I want to build a UFO and fly to Mars.
Right.
You might as well have just said that, because they will treat you exactly the same way. That's crazy. You're trying to build a UFO. You're trying to build a business. That's for white folk. You can't build no UFO. That's for Martians. You can't build a business. That's for white folk. Starting to see it now, everybody? It's not accidental. They gave up and surrendered and have accepted their inferior position to white people. And when you come along and start talking in a direction other than that, that's a problem. Because, you see, they see their degree as not documentation that you went to school. They see their degree as a social contract. They see that degree as a contract between them and white society. That once I have this degree, I've jumped all your hurdles, I've cleared all your obstacles, and now you are legally obligated to let me in because I passed your test that you gave me. Therefore, this document means that I am guaranteed a position because I did everything I was supposed to do according to your standards and what you put in front of them. That's what they think in their heads. They don't just see a degree as a sheet of paper. They believe that a degree has mystical, magical. They believe that a degree works the same way that the levels of magic work in Harry Potter. That you go from being an apprentice to a journeyman to a master, wizard, whatever, warlock. That's what they really believe. They truly believe that. And that's why they are pressuring you as much as they do, because they believe that a PhD is mastery. The problem is they can't tell you exactly what it is you're mastering. They can't actually tell you what it's supposed to give you. And if they do, the first thing they'll say is get a job. And that's fine.
Exactly.
Steph, I think that's a great idea if you want a job. Now, if you don't, it's a different matter. But if you do, then what? You go ahead and you get your degree, and then you settle in for your lifetime of hoping you can hold on to that job your whole life. Parents come from a day and age when General Motors was the biggest car company on earth. That there was a job waiting for you somewhere. All you had to do was go to it. They are not accustomed to the idea that there is not a job waiting for you somewhere. They're not accustomed to that. They have been institutionalized in inferiority to white supremacy. They've been institutionalized like convicts that you can take out of the prison, and even after you take them out, they still find a way to get back in. There was a documentary that I'd seen once that was talking about that. I see now why so many convicts end up going back. I see why they end up going back now. They end up going back because you release them out there on the streets and they don't have a job. They don't have any skills. They got a criminal record. He's going to go violate his probation or whatever, and he's back in jail. He's institutionalized.
Absolutely. I know somebody that's been institutionalized since they were 13, and they're now 50 years old. And I used to tell people when they got out that they're just out on vacation because prison was their home. And they used to tell me I was cruel for saying that, but it was true. When they get out on the outside, they've been so institutionalized, they don't know how to function. So if I go back to prison, I don't have any expectations. I don't have to pay any bills. I don't have anybody that can ask me for anything. I'm free. I don't have to be a man or a woman. I don't have any obligations. And I won't let anybody down because I'm not out in that world. And they go back because that's what they understand. They can't make it out here on their own. They don't understand how the free world operates.
Sounds like for a student as well. I'm just staying in college. I'll pass my life trying to get an undergraduate.
Well, these lifetime students, they just go from one major to another.
Yeah.
But that's what I meant by you never actually do anything. A degree is supposed to be the means to a goal. The degree is not supposed to be a goal in and of itself, but for most of these people, it becomes a goal in and of itself. And then you ask them, what do they want to do with their lives after they get their degree? And you don't really get any specifics. And what I'm saying to you is that, Stephanie, it depends. If you don't actually know what you want to do with your life, I don't know what to tell you. See, when people call my broadcast, you all know whenever the young people call me and want to know about starting a business, what is the first thing I always ask? What do you want to do with your life? And let's see if we can make a business out of that. But then the truth starts coming out. Well, I don't really know what I want to do. Then you will never get there. See, they're not used to that. They're not used to the idea of somebody asking them honestly, what do you want to do with your life? They're used to the idea that somebody is just going to give them their purpose. Let's see if we can take a phone caller here. Caller from 314, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Mr. Jason.
Hello, what's your name? Where you're calling from? As if.
Area from Missouri.
As if I didn't already know who it was, of course.
After hearing all about businesses, it's starting to make me think as if I know I need a business because I guess businesses, you said businesses weren't the only way to power and influence, but I still think that it is the number one way for Black people. So I know that a business is the right way, but I have no idea how I would even start one. I think that investing in a business or joining a partnership in a business would be good, but I feel like it's tough. Like that is a lot to carry, right? Or am I wrong?
Okay, we talk about power, wealth, and influence. I mean, you can do like John Kerry. You can marry somebody who's already got money. You can do that. However, that's kind of tough because competition's kind of steep to marry those people, ain't it?
Yes.
I mean, I'm just saying that's an alternative, but competition's kind of steep. The other way is that what you said about investing in a business. Now, what you can do is, I mean, that's what venture capitalists do. Venture capitalists do not come up with ideas. They just invest in other people's ideas. That's another way. You don't have to actually run the business. You can just become an investor like John Malone did with BET. I mean, you can become an investor. Oh, wait a minute. You have to have a lot of money to be an investor, don't you?
Yes.
Oh, well. Now, the other thing is maybe you can find somebody who you are both, you've got more savings than they do, so you have the ability, they lack the liquid capital to be able to invest, and you do have it, and you can use that to maneuver your way into a business. You can do that, but once again, you have to find somebody who has a good idea, and are you necessarily qualified to evaluate the value of that idea? I don't know. That's something you have to figure out on your own. But what I will say is that that's another way you could do it, is find a proper business or an investment to invest in. Once again, that's going to take some money if you're going to actually accumulate wealth from it. Making a few dollars is one thing. If your plan is to acquire wealth, that's going to take a little bit more capital. Last but not least is a business. Now, a lot of people would say that investing in and of itself is a business. For the purposes of this discussion, I'm going to separate it because you don't necessarily have to be involved in the day-to-day business operations in order to invest in one. But when you're in your own business, you need to be. But that's something that you can control. So you do have other means of acquiring power, wealth, and influence. I mean, there's other means to doing it. But the business, a business that you own and start yourself, I would consider that to be the best route to go because it takes care of other issues. Like, what if Apple had decided that they never wanted to do the iPhone? Or if they never wanted to do the iPod? What if they decided to do that? Then, what would you have said then if you were an Apple investor and Apple could have made a bunch of money, but they refused to take the iPod? Now what?
We wouldn't have Apple iPhones or nothing like that. See, everything you're saying is pointing to starting the business. I keep just everything. It sounds like it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But I have no idea how I would start. Like, I know for a fact that we need to have a Black-owned computer company. We need to. Like, I think that is a must. But I have no idea how me specifically would pursue that idea.
Well, why do you think we need a Black-owned, quote, computer company? First of all, what does that mean, a Black-owned computer company? What is that and what does that mean?
Well, I would think that it means that it will start, like a Black, like, you know how people say a Black, nationally Black or college, like it was mostly made by a Black person and it mostly had Black students, stuff like that. But that's what I would think of something.
I understand what a computer company is, and I definitely understand what Black is. What I'm saying is, when you say a black company, what's going to make your company special? We've already got plenty of computer companies out there. What is going to make people want to be customers of yours?
That is kind of hard. I think if we work with something like, you know how Linux is? Maybe if somebody would, like, figure out how to make something out of Linux, or maybe some open like that, open-based, or start something new, like how people started out Bitcoins, like they start their own thing or something like that. I don't know, but I just think that if we own something in the technology based business or something like that, would be really successful somehow.
Okay, well, here's the thing. All businesses, profits, and everything are going to depend on your ability to create an answer to a problem, okay? So what is the problem that you're trying to solve with your computer business?
I think that a big problem with computer businesses, maybe price. I think price, no, price isn't really. I don't think price is one, but, that is a hard question. I never really thought of, that's why I don't think I could start a business, because I haven't expanded my knowledge to think about things like this.
Well,
what
I'm saying is that you're saying you want a computer business, but you are not telling us what the business is actually going to do. Mark Zuckerberg did not say, I want to start a white-owned or Jewish-owned website. He said, I want a website that will make it easier for people to socially network with their friends in college and share each other's pictures and daily activities and what they ate and all that mess. That was what he said. Because that's what we in college are interested in. And then he made a website that solved that problem. So if you're going to start a computer company, you need to start from the point of, okay, what is the problem that my company is going to solve for people? And then the company comes from that.
Well, thinking other than computer-based, but still in technology, I think that we should have a network for, I don't know if there's already a network, I might be wrong, but I think we should have like a big network for black-owned businesses, like a network that are all together, all, you know, together and things like that, like anything, any black businesses could be a part of this network, an online network, like online, like Etsy or eBay or stuff like that. You think that is a good idea? Like, you think, you get what I'm saying about that? I think we need something like that. That's a problem, like not being connected all together with businesses and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, like I say, I'd have to see exactly what you mean, because they've already got websites they can do that on. Once again, that would be like, what's special about what? Why should they? What is it that yours is going to give them that all these other sites out there will not give them? Being black is not going to get you preferential treatment from black people. As a matter of fact, most times you will find that you will receive the opposite. So it's not enough to just say I'm a black-owned website catering to black folk. That's not going to do very much. If that were the case, Black Planet would be number one among black people today and not Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, that's tough. See,
before anything else, you cannot be ethnic where solving problems is concerned. You are going to have to be innovative. And that means that you are going to have to genuinely solve a problem in a way that none of your competitors, black or otherwise, are doing.
See, I am not that business oriented. That is the problem. And I want to be business oriented, but
Don't think of it that way. Think of it as being solutions oriented. You need to become solutions-oriented. Your business will come from your ability to solve problems. Case in point, let's just take a look at the experiment that is the documentary 7 a.m. What did 7 a.m. come from? It came from the fact that I did not see anybody out there who was discussing black entrepreneurship, and that is the reason that we are the poorest people in the world, because we exist at the lowest level of the capitalist system, the consumer, and the worker. So I made a documentary that addressed that problem, and nobody else was doing it or is doing it. Nobody.
Yeah,
people love their music.
I understand.
But up until the iPod, you didn't really have a player that could take files beyond just the standard 15, 16 songs that you could squeeze onto a CD. Then came the MP3 player. So what I'm saying is that that's the standpoint you need to look at it from.
Wow. I never thought it that way.
Talking about starting a business is very easy to do. When the discussion moves to, okay, a business is based upon solving a problem, that's a lot harder because most black folk, if getting all of a sudden the money doesn't bother you anymore, does it, Ariel? Wow, I could have $100 million, but it's not going to help me. Why not, Ariel? Because I don't actually have a plan on how to use it.
Yeah.
And all the money in the world will not give you a good idea. You got to sit down and look at the world around you and formulate that on your own. That's the bad news. The good news is that is where wealth is created. Your ability to solve problems that other people cannot. They may be big problems, they may be simple problems, but your ability to tackle that particular obstacle is going to determine your power and wealth. And it's as easy as that, which is not very easy sometimes, but it's no more complicated than that.
Okay, I get it. So I guess I'd have to take some time to do exactly what you said, look around me and figure out problems. Now, you said that it doesn't matter how big or small the problem is, that there is a problem. I do notice some things from my peers. There's not a big problem. It's like, because I told you before that I do little things for people, like make cookies or buy cases, like resell cases from the internet, stuff like that. And I noticed that a lot of people always ask me, hey, can you get this? Hey, can you do this? And you said to look at a problem and to figure out how to solve it. And I see that as a problem because I'm only one person. I can't always keep buying cases for people all the time and then reselling them and things like that. So if I was to think of a network that would be like that, do you think that would – you said that there's so many of this already, but people don't seem to be using it. People still want to ask other people to do things. So, maybe if I was to –
That's where opportunity comes from. Opportunity comes from other people saying, hey, why should I do this? I'll pay you. Thank you very much. Drop it off over here.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be hard? Why?
I don't know. This is crazy. Like, I would have to think of some way to get it so that people would be able to get things easier. That's a problem, that people find it hard to get things. I don't know, like cases and stuff like that.
Thanks.
It's just so tough.
I mean, that's what I meant by it can be as simple or as hard as you make it. But what I'm saying is that you need to look around, first of all. I mean, for example, let's just say that you are in a place, for example. Now, in the city that you're in, would you say that the population, is it mostly college students like you, middle-aged folk like your parents, or what would you say?
I'm not in college yet. But,
well, no, I'm just saying as far as the population where you are, I mean.
There's mostly, I would say that there's mostly kids my age where I am right now. Because I'm actually in a high school district, so there's mostly teenagers my age and adults. Now, older people, not so much, but people my age and adults, yes, a lot of people.
Okay, I got something for you. Are you saying that you're delivering things? Are you saying you're making deliveries?
Well, this is what I do. My friends are always asking me, hey, Aria, I saw this. Can you find a case for me online and buy it for me and then give it to me? Like a reseller, wholesale,
stuff like that.
Okay,
I got you. Okay, so won't you create something called Aaron Girl? This is your business. Aaron Girl, you get your business cards, and you become that Aaron Girl, and you charge. I don't know if you want to charge by the hour. I don't want to charge by the mile, but you make that your business.
Yeah, I would think of an interest, something like that.
Well, I mean, but what I'm saying is, what she's saying is that what you're looking at is when people present you with a problem, or when people present you, if people are having an issue that they don't want to take care of, whatever the case might be, your ability to solve problems is what determines that. Now, the reason why I was asking before about the makeup of the population where you are. Now, you said that people mostly like your parents?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, let's just say that you have a situation like that, okay? Now, I don't know whether you live in a middle-class, upper-middle-class neighborhood, lower-class neighborhood.
I actually live in a giant apartment complex, like huge. Like, there's apartments all over the place. And
okay,
now I live
fine.
Right next to the highway, next to a high school.
That's fine. How many baby moms do you have there?
I catch the bus a lot, I'll tell you that. So there's a lot of them, because I see a lot of people, their kids on the bus like that.
Thank you. Now, just from what you just stated right there alone, what do you see?
I see that people need to try to get some money so they can come up from just always being on the bus and stuff like that.
Let's create
a family, like a better family, so that they won't have to go through things like that, always being on the bus, stuff like that.
Now you're trying to fix people's lives. We're in a social issue.
Oh.
Let's just deal with these sons of guns where they are. What is it that we just determined from just what you just said alone right there? You said, I get on the bus and I see plenty of them with their children. Now, what matters to a person more than their kids? I see opportunity. I see an opportunity. What I'm saying is that it's situations like that. If you live in an area, the reason why I asked you for the age makeup of the people where you are is because I wanted you to start thinking about it on those levels. Now, I'm in Shreveport, which basically is and you got a lot of older people here. And on the white side of town, you see the little old ladies and whatnot walking their dogs and things like that. Some of them you see hunched over and stuff. You know, it's just walking their dogs and stuff like that. What does that tell you? We got a police officer here. He's a cop, actually. I mean, a real police officer. And he also has a business that he runs that goes around picking up the dog the dog droppings. I shouldn't say droppings. I guess dogs don't really have droppings. But picking up dog waste for little old ladies. And he actually makes a pretty good coin in it, actually. To be totally honest with you, he's got a business doing that. I guess the little old white ladies trust him because he's a police officer and what could possibly go wrong? And he's black, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point there is that he knows about the little old ladies like I do, like everybody does here. He was the only one who was willing to go out and go capitalize on them. Now, you can talk about, well, I wouldn't want to do that and this, that, there, and the other. But let me tell you, if he ever got fired from being a police officer, he's going to work because he wants to, not because he has to. And there's no better feeling in the world than knowing that I'm at my job because I want to be here, not because my rent requires me to be here. And I don't have to take any garbage I don't want to take. Because I can get up whenever I want to.
Well, you know what I've noticed? What Miss, I forgot who that was who just talked to me. I don't remember my voice. But I just thought about what she said about, you know, doing the business cards. I could probably create a website, do business cards, things like that. And it's just, oh, it's like, it
well,
kind
I'll give
of
you, I'll give you, I'll give you one thing right here, because you were talking about, she was talking about cell phone cases, Mona, which is what she was referring to before, and that people.
Oh, okay.
When she was saying cases, she was referring to cell phone cases. She didn't say cell phone, she was referring to cell phones. Isn't that right, Ariel?
Yes, because all my friends always want one.
Okay, we're running short on time here, and she wants to give me her life story, because she could have said it before, and she's saying it again. Now, okay. Yeah, I'm G-checking tonight. Okay, now, what we're going to have here, Ariel, is a situation here where you're picking out cell phone cases for people. Do you know what that reminds me of?
No.
Now, this is what I mean about this. Now, it costs you nothing to research things and to check out proof of concept. What you are saying is that I want to be a consultant. Because you went through the word Aaron. Ain't nobody paying Aaron people very much. A consultant, on the other hand, is going to be able to charge more. And the first thing that I think of when I think about women, online purchases, and consulting is Shoe Fat, Just Fab, and Shoe Dazzle.
Yep.
Now, I'm a guy, and that kind of tells you how much research I've done in this stuff. And I'm a guy. And this is why they call me. All right, y'all know the rest. In any case, what I'm saying to you here is that, have you ever considered that possibility? The Shoe Fab of cell phone cases. And if you don't have any cell phone cases that you like, why don't you see about making your own? You can charge more for those being handmade. And
I see people doing that a lot.
If they do have them, or if you come up with a custom design, go to Alibaba and get them made in China, and they can make as many as you want. Now, that will require a bit of a more substantial investment. But what I am saying is that that's how businesses are built, and you have options. People want something. You supply it to them. Your job is to solve the problem of how do I supply it to them. Before somebody else beats me to it.
Yep.
That's what you do. Now, I've got Ariel on here. Why don't I bring on somebody else? This should be Jasmine on the line right now. She was in my chat room jumping up and down. 910. 910 has been abducted.
What is it wrong now, Michael? I forgot you no more.
Who? What is she talking about, y'all? 910, are you on my phone playing?
Hello?
Yes, why are you on my phone playing?
I wasn't playing. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Yes, you are playing. We've been talking to you now for a minute. Who did you think 910 was?
I didn't hear you. I was actually listening to the broadcast on
I
the.
I didn't hear you. She called on the phone, everybody, but she's not actually listening to it. Please tell me you don't live in California.
No, I was listening to it on the on my TV. I had it connected to my soundbar, and I.
We all know how bright that is.
Mm-hmm.
I know a 27-year-old man who's worried about Confederate flags. I want to hook y'all up. No, not him. There's a fella in California who's seen hundreds of thousands of documentaries. That might be a potential candidate. Wake up, Jasmine.
I'm here.
Apparently
had a friend,
you're not, because you keep switching back and forth between putting the phone on mute to talk to whoever that is behind you, and that's kind of breaking you up. So did we catch you and him in a bad time? Are y'all going to end up on Real Housewives or something, or should I call you back later?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure now, because if I hear police sirens pull up behind you, I'm going to be like, we called her at a bad time.
I actually wanted to know if you can explain something to a friend of mine who was actually listening to your broadcast as well. He actually told me he's a black male in his early 30s, he told me he doesn't believe in white supremacy, and he needed examples and everything like that. And I told him I know someone who's broadcasting live right now, and he can better articulate it to you than I can. And I just
so
he,
what you're saying is that you have a 30-something-year-old black male who denies that the existence of white supremacy.
Basically, yes. And I don't want.
And where is this uninformed individual?
We're both located in North Carolina. He's one of my classmates.
Where is he right now?
Right, he's actually right. He's next to me. Well, not yeah, next to me right now.
That's fine. Well, if you two can quit rubbing on each other long enough, you can hand him the phone. And he can explain to me about the absence of white supremacy. I'll be very anxious to hear exactly how that works.
Uh-oh.
So tonight, he will have the opportunity to educate me tonight. I'd like to find out about this absence of white supremacy, or when we beat them. I'd like to find out about that. Where is he?
Okay, give me just a second.
Yes, just hand him the phone.
Hello,
you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio program.
How's it going, boss man?
Now, what is your name, son?
My name is Mike. He's a good friend of mine or whatever. Okay. And we were talking, and we heard the conversation.
Well,
before
let's
the young
not
lady
do that,
called
Mike.
In.
Let's not do that. Because
okay.
I don't want to get what you said to her. I want to find out what you're going to say to the questions that I ask. My first question I want to ask is that, how old are you exactly?
32.
You're 32?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you biracial?
No.
Do you identify yourself as a black male?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe in the existence of white supremacy in America today?
No.
Okay. Can you explain to us what white supremacy is?
I cannot explain to you what white supremacy is, but I don't believe in it. However,
okay,
it would
but that would be the same. Excuse me. You said enough now. You just said I cannot explain what white supremacy is, but I don't believe in its existence. How can you deny the existence of something that you have just admitted you do not know of and cannot define? That would be
okay,
like saying, I deny the existence of air conditioners. Do you know what an air conditioner is? No, I just immigrated in from Botswana, but I don't believe that air conditioners exist, even though I do not know what an air conditioner is.
Okay. And again, I do not believe in white supremacy. However, it would be ignorant of me to disagree with the fact that there are Caucasians that do not like Africans in this African Americans in this country.
Not white folks not liking us. I'm asking you because you and I, you cannot sit here and say I don't believe in the existence of white supremacy after you have said I don't even know what it is. I can't
define. I didn't say that, sir.
Okay, I asked you, do you know what it is, and you said no.
I can't simply believe in it because.
I don't agree with the idea that there is. I didn't ask you
supremacy.
What you believe in. I'm asking you again. Can you tell us what white supremacy is?
I can't tell you what white supremacy is because I don't believe in it because I don't see it.
And you can't. Okay, then explain to us what we think white supremacy is. Doesn't matter what you believe. Explain to us what we think exists.
What I see is that a lot of times people look to have someone to blame for their misfortunes in their life due to the decisions that they make. A lot of times the idea that someone must be at fault for something is often passed down from parents to children, media, music, different things like that. When I speak with people about the so-called white supremacy, they never give any name. They always say they.
Okay, I asked you what it was, and you can't even tell us you have, don't even have a concept of white supremacy would be. And I asked you,
well,
and you can't.
I would ask you, sir, if I'm supposedly uninformed, I would ask you, what is the definition?
Wait a minute, but no. We don't play that game. You have already said, I don't believe it exists.
You can't
say, I don't believe
and
it exists.
I'm here.
You can say, but I
and
don't
again,
know
I'm
what
here.
It is.
And again, I'm here. And I'm talking to you, and I'm telling you my position.
Listen to me very carefully right now.
My position states that
my phone was perfectly fine.
Doesn't exist.
Listen very carefully right now to what I'm going to tell you, because I'll only say to you one time, because you sound like the little immigrant fellow who called in before who didn't know anything about computer programmers and tried to pretend it did.
And again, sir.
You sound like
I would
him.
Like for you to
are
define
you
to me exactly
I'm
what white supremacy
you,
would be because evidently,
excuse me, don't talk
you.
Over me. Do not talk over me.
I'm
are
sorry,
you him?
Sir, you're getting
are
off
you
of the subject that we're talking about.
Okay, I'm asking
again,
you, are
sir.
You him?
I don't understand how that has
are
any bearing
the
on the conversation that we're having
before?
Right now, sir.
Are you the guy who called in before, was ignorant about computer programming, and tried to bluff his way on my phone to say that you knew about computer programming and knew computer programmers, and you were lying and you didn't? Are you him?
Hold up. I never said that I knew anything about computer programming. I'm not a computer programmer. I'm a sociologist.
Okay, because it sounds like you're the guy who called in before asking about starting a business and when you had a degree in sociology, and then I was talking about programming, and you tried to say that computer programmers were doing X, Y, Z, and I said, no, you don't know anything about them. And you tried to bluff your way through.
That's a negative, sir. I remember that conversation, but that conversation
like
was not
him.
How it went down.
I might say you are the same guy.
I understand, sir.
Okay.
Again, sir, I
you
think we're deviating from the topic, and
no,
the
we're not
topic
deviating.
At hand is white supremacy.
I want to remind everybody who
and
you were.
Stating
last
that
time,
I'm
you got cut from
that
my
style.
Program before because you decided that when I was talking, you were going to try to talk over me. Rule number two of the Black Channel is when I'm talking, you shut up.
Oh, wow, really? This is how you treat people?
No, I don't treat people. I treat idiots like that. I do not treat
so
people that
insult them
not
with a
person.
Post-hominid attack.
No, it's not an insult. That is defining your physical
character.
Why would
character. You call someone stupid for?
Because when a person doesn't know something and he resorts to whorehouse hood rat tactics like, I will just keep talking even though I don't know anything, that makes him an idiot. Maybe you need to pick up a dictionary and find the definition of idiot right after you find the definition of white and supremacy. Right
well, I can
you look
tell you from
up.
A sociological standpoint, there is absolutely no such thing as a white person or a black person. However, my dear friend, you are severely misinformed. There are Caucasian people.
I'm not your dear friend.
And there are African-American people here.
I'm not your dear friend.
You can say that.
If you cannot define white supremacy,
and again,
you
sir,
can't
you are now deviating from the conversation.
Okay, you're going to have to shut up
and I will
now.
Ask you.
I'm not going to ask you again. Be quiet.
Okay.
You have been asked
so,
to define white supremacy.
I can safely conclude
if
at this time
define,
you have not again answered the comment.
Okay, this is the guy before who was trying to do that before. So, Jasmine, I'm going to make a suggestion to Jasmine right now. Jasmine, you need a new group of friends. If this is the guy that you're hanging out with and this is the second time that you've had him call in, this ignoramus is bringing down the collective IQ of your house. He is in your home, which means you have some type of relationship with him. You need to find a male who is about something. I know that beds get cold at night, and I understand that. And nobody likes a cold bed. But do you know what the only thing worse than having a bed that's cold is? A bed that's being warmed by a moron. That's the only thing worse than a bed that is cold. He's a 30-something-year-old black male. He called in before, tried to lie his way through the conversation by saying that computer programmers weren't making any money, and he knew computer programmers that weren't making any money. And I was like, what a jackass. You're such a liar, because when I asked him what programmers he was talking about, he couldn't name a language. He couldn't name anything. But he knew that they're not making any money. What's your degree in, Mr. I work at a prison? He's a prison guard trying to get a degree in sociology. That's why I'm the authority. I remember everything. This the prison guard who's getting a degree in sociology can't start a business. Understand something, brother. You have demonstrated on multiple occasions now that that's why you can't start one. You're not cut out for one. And Jasmine, he's not cut out for female company either. Now, I don't know why you're hanging out with this dude, and I'm pretty sure you two have a relationship. Don't even lie and say you don't. You're 20-something years old, Jasmine. He is 30-something and a dead end. He just sat here and told the world with a straight face that he doesn't believe in. First of all, he doesn't know what white supremacy is. But even if I did know what it was, which I don't even believe it exists. That was what he just told the world. Now, you should be embarrassed to have somebody like that sitting next to you. You see, I wasn't going to sit here and argue with him about, well, do you believe it exists? Well, let me explain to your brother what white supremacy is, why you should be, you don't believe it exists. Well, let me explain. No, just tell me, what do you think it is? I don't know what it is. So what I'm saying is that when you've been raised around big, fat, bastard baby makers, and they do not require logic, reason, and sound thought from you, that's the kind of male you end up with. Now, Jasmine, I don't know who gave him access to your home. I don't know who keeps letting him in your house, your apartment, your home, whatever. Tonight when he leaves, I'm going to make you a friendly suggestion. When he leaves tonight, it needs to be the last time that he darkens your doorstep. Mona is 53 years old, and she will tell you, a nigga like that is not going to take you anywhere. You're going to be 51 years old. You're 21 now. You're going to be 51 years old with this dude, 61 years old. Broke as he could ever be, still sitting up here running his mouth as if what he can say is a substitute for what he knows. He doesn't know anything, so what I say will qualify as a substitute for what I don't know, right? No, it doesn't work that way. More black women waste their lives by getting desperate and settling some jigaboon in their house rather than raising their standards and saying, you know what, I'm going to get a fat wallet and a flat belly and get me a man who's about something. I don't care if he has a job and you don't. Get you a job and then start counting assets. But to every black female out there who's got a male in your house like him, you all need to do yourselves a favor and dump the dead weight. He just sat here and told you that white supremacy doesn't exist. So that means when the police pull you over and beat your ass, that he's on the side of the police. Did you hear me, Juan? He's on the side of the police. He is going to look at you and say, well, what did you do to upset the good officer? How did you bring this upon yourself? Scared nigger reactions. What did you do to make these good white people upset with you, Jasmine? Well, if you didn't run your mouth so much, maybe he wouldn't have had to bat you around a little bit. I'm sure that you provoked him.
Well, isn't your prison guard license, right?
Stephanie, you're going to need to take your phone off speaker. It sounds like you're calling us from deep inside the Death Star.
I don't have it on speaker.
Okay, well, I'm not sure what's going on with
okay,
your...
Okay, is it better?
Okay, because that don't sound like a Bluetooth. That sounds like a blue jaw. But what was that? What was that again that you were saying?
Does he work in the prison?
Okay, I'm not making out what you're saying. Now, we're all going to chip in and do a Kickstarter for Stephanie to get an Android. I'm not making out what you're saying, Stephanie.
I was asking, is he not in prison? He works in prison.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where part of his mentality comes from.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that you have two types of Negroes in America, two types of black folk, as I explained last night. Black folk who understand racism exists and do something about it, and black folk who understand it exists and go back to picking the cotton. Now, I'll let you all decide between him and me which one is picking the cotton. Because you see, you can see it, but if you deny white supremacy, you have to deny the existence of racism. You cannot believe in the existence of racism and simultaneously deny white supremacy. It doesn't work that way. And Negroes like him, y'all would be black females. That's the kind of Negro right there that is looking for a woman to take care of him. TBA, how can you say that? Because if he's not willing to stand up against something obvious as white supremacy, y'all would be damned to think he's going to stand up to the landlord. The answers that he's giving you all about that, that's the same answers that he will be giving you sitting in your living room. And that is why the last time that he called in, he was at Jasmine's place. And he's tonight calling back from Jasmine's place. Jasmine, you need to get that damn dead weight out your face, baby. Too many young black females out here letting dead weight niggas take up space in their homes. TBA, did you call him that? Damn right. Letting dumb, unmotivated, uninformed, unintellectual black males sit in your home. Well, he's good in bed, so he has a utility. You take your ass down to Club Deja Vu, buy you some toys, and you get that nigga out your house. I'm not even going to pull punches on this tonight. Last night got me cranked up. Tonight I'm just rolling out. To every black female out there, and Mona and Shay and Melissa and everybody else will back me up on this. From Afro Babe to Zaza Ali, tell me I'm lying. And Mona, everybody here, Mona is the queen on this thing because she's been there and done that. A Negro who is good in bed and don't contribute a damn thing beyond that. He can run his mouth, but he can't run no business. And you will watch decades fall off your life with good sex, and your youth is gone. Your most productive years are gone, but you had some good sex. Good sex don't pay the damn bills. Good sex don't get your car fixed unless you're sleeping with a mechanic. Good sex ain't gonna fix that. You need somebody who's going to help you build a life, not build a bunk bed. Want good sex? Go get an Adam and Eve catalog. Look it up. You get you a man who's about something. But you all need to stop with these damn stand-up comedian monologue cartoon coon niggas y'all hang out with. You have to stop that. These cartoon character Negroes who ain't doing nothing with their lives. It is not your job, Jasmine, to raise a grown-ass man. He's supposed to be grown and be raised. And at this point, he's neither grown nor raised nor rational. But you're going to sit there with him. Let him keep sitting on your couch. You go ahead and keep doing that. You will be 61, wondering where the years went. I was trying to help him. I was trying to help him. That's what a leech does to you. I was trying to help the leech. Why? How get the leech, help the leech get big? He will sit there and look at the police state and say that you getting arrested was your fault. First, he tells you white supremacy doesn't exist. Next, he tells you race systematic racism does not exist. Until it happens to him. Now, when it happens to him, it'll be white supremacy and it'll be racism. Ain't that right, Clarence Thomas? It's a high-tech lynching when you are the one in the crosshairs. For everybody else, and y'all just lazy niggas. I hope every female tonight took a lesson from that phone call. That's the second time he's called in. He called from Jasmine's phone both times. That's the kind of Negro that makes y'all spit your life away. He'll sit there and keep talking in circles and talking in circles. And the point of him talking in circles, not to get an answer, the point of him talking in circles is to wear you down. Don't get no Negro trying to wear you down. Get one who's building you up. If he can't give you a straightforward answer, you leave his ass. The only problem here is Jasmine probably did not know the right question to ask. First question to ask is, wait a minute, you deny it exists. Can you tell us, tell me what you think white supremacy is? Well, I don't know. At that point, you get pick up your damn purse. Actually, he's at your place. You go open the door for him. Because if he was a white man, that's right, I'm going to go there. If that was a white man sitting in your living room talking about, I don't believe in white supremacy, you would not have sat there that long. You wouldn't have called me up with that mess. I need grown folk to act like grown folk. Black women listening, don't you waste your time with some Negro talking like that. Don't you waste your time and don't you waste your life. You leave him where he is. If he is that blind and that scared and that cowardly or that worthless, you leave him where he is. You go find you somebody with some sense. They sell batteries that'll help you with your simple needs. You get that nigga out your bed and out your place. It'll be 30 years from now. He'll still sit in that prison. He'll be fatter. He'll be grayer. He'll be older. And your life will have gone nowhere with him telling you that money don't matter and racism don't exist. You better send Simona a private message and find where that ends. Caller from 214, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, this is Sydney from Houston.
Hello, Sydney from Houston. What's on your mind?
Well, I just graduated. I'm 22. I got my degree in creative writing, so I just kind of wanted to get your perspective on the future of Black screenwriting, because today all I've seen is Tyler Perry films and Slay films, all making tons of money. None really are that good. So, but I don't really know why that is. Is it we don't have good Black writers? Is there some kind of force at the top that's preventing our kind of movies we want to get out there? Same with television shows. We don't have a Game of Thrones. We don't have a Breaking Bad or that kind of quality. So I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on the future of that.
All right, let's take a quick example here, okay? Because the last idiot who was on the line, he sat up here and told you that white supremacy, he doesn't know what it is. But even if it did, it doesn't exist. What is white supremacy? White supremacy is the systemic strategy of using power, wealth, and influence for the purposes of denying another group of people power, wealth, and influence based upon their race. And you will see this strategy executed across every platform in every way. They may use different tools, but it's the same strategy. In the entertainment business, the strategy is to deny Black people as a group power, wealth, and influence. Now, in a war zone, how do you beat a people? You kill or enslave the warrior class, the males. The males cannot be allowed to rise supremacy for any reason. Why? Because the males are the threat, are the chief warriors. The only males who are acceptable are, as I said, the ones who can be imprisoned. Those are the ones who bow down. Those are the ones you can convert to tokens. The modern system of white supremacy does not rely on shackles on your feet. It relies on shackles on your mind. And so what they do is they send out they will find a token Negro. They will elevate that one token, and that's supposed to be your eye on the prize. You see, Tyler Perry is there, therefore I can get there. And it's a lie. You can't, because what Tyler Perry has was given to him. Not at the stage level, but at the level he's at right now, it was given to him. Lionsgate had to give him a movie deal. But they were not going to just give that deal to just anybody. No, you got to be vetted. You got to be proven. They do every form of psychological scanning on you they can name. Do you know how Oprah Winfrey met Dr. Phil?
No.
Mona, Stephanie, do you all know how Oprah Winfrey met Phil McGraw?
No, I don't.
It's been so long that most people do not remember. About 15 years ago or so, Oprah Winfrey was sued by a cattle association because on her podcast, she had made the comments she had one of her wacky guests on there that were talking about beef is bad for you. So Oprah, in her usual patronizing way, said, "Oh, I will never eat another hamburger again so long as I live." And she got sued for that comment.
That was a black cow?
Well, it was a cattle association that sued her and said that she was defending cattle.
Okay, I remember that.
Now, she got sued behind that. Now, it doesn't matter whether a lawsuit is frivolous or not. If you do not answer it, the plaintiffs win by default if you do not show up. So what does that mean? That means she has to go. Frivolous or not, you cannot deny a court subpoena. Can't guarantee they're going to win, but we can guarantee that you must show up. Now, when she started the case, her lawyers had them hire a jury consultant, a psychologist, to evaluate the jurors. His name was Phil McGraw.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how Oprah Winfrey met Dr. Phil. But don't you know the TV networks have people like him? Don't you know that the movie studios have people like him? He's far from the best. And he's not the first, and he's damn sure not the only. They got plenty of people like him to evaluate you, to scrutinize you, to validate you, to make sure that you have the psyche of the kind of person who will not challenge the system. Or should I say, will not challenge them.
So where within that frame would you put Spike Lee?
Well, take a look at where Spike's doing now. I think that question kind of answers itself.
Mm-hmm.
What's Spike doing now?
Not much that I can see.
I wonder what Spike Lee has done that doesn't get him as much support as Tyler Perry gets. Why is it the studios have not been knocking themselves over to support him over the last 25 years? Why not? Because this Negro keeps leaving the plantation too often.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what woman he's with, the bottom line is, he keeps doing all the wrong things. Well, the wrong things from the perspective of white supremacy.
Right.
What he does not really empower them. Yeah, we're going to put him on the back burner. See, they loved and celebrated him when he was low and was hood. But when he started talking bigger than that, okay, you're a problem. You are a problem, and we're going to deal with that. We're going to starve you out. As black people, where we fail is that we do not bring our own financing.
Mm-hmm.
The story that I put up today about Mr. Todd's pie factory. The man was making money before then, but things went bad for him. What did going on Shark Tank do? Shark Tank promoted him on a national level. So what does that tell you? That tells you that this was a black man who was not advertising for himself. And if you take a look at his pre-Shark Tank days, I guarantee you, you will find where he did not advertise for himself. Half of his profits should have been going into advertising, because that was all that Shark Tank really did to him.
Right.
Why is it that he did not invest in his own promotion? Why?
Well, do you think part of the problem is, too, that we, the black community, don't ask for much? It seems like we can be satisfied with scandal, and so they keep giving us scandal, and they keep giving us Medeas.
The problem is that not that we are satisfied with being given scandal, but the fact that we are expecting other people to give us anything at all. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make this very clear to you, ma'am. Very, very, very clear. You're 22 years old. Have you ever in your life seen a TV show starring a black male where white people were answering to him? The answer is no.
Can't think of one.
You can't think of, no, it's not you can't think of it, it's not there. There is none. Not that I can't think, it's there, but I can't think of it. No, it's not. There isn't one. I'm in my late 30s. 15 years older than you. It ain't there. Mona's 53. About 15 years older than me. Mona, can you remember one?
No.
Okay. So we've got almost a century. Actually, we got a century of age on this phone right now. And none of us has ever seen that. How is it that a century of age cannot find a single television programming in America in its history where white people were answering to a black man? But we can show you plenty of shows where black people answer to white men.
Yep.
That is called white supremacy. When everywhere you go and everywhere you look, you are answering to them, but they never answer to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's called white supremacy. Now, if you're a brain-dead Negro with a sociology degree, you might have a hard time figuring that out. But for everybody else, that is white supremacy. Kind of like with your church, where you answer to white people. You can be a Christian as long as you join a white denomination, Catholic, whatever. Ultimately, you will be answering to white people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way supremacy works. So when you look at your television programming, it is going to reinforce white supremacy. They put a black female out there bedwinching to a white man. At no time is she now or will she ever in the future be superior to him. Shonda Rhimes knows exactly how to put together a formula that makes brain-dead, selfish Negro heifers happy. But then white men are smiling. If the white men are smiling, isn't that supposed to be your first damn clue that something's wrong?
Yes.
How can this be in your best interest and every white man in the room is smiling? Is this really in your best interest if all the white men are smiling? You need to go back and reexamine that thing. If they're all smiling, it's because it increases their power, not yours. It's got a black face in front of it. Let me keep looking at this thing. How long are you going to sit there and stare at it till I figure out what you did to it? See, we accept tokenism. Shows like Scandal, the first season of 24 with a black president, a president who is subservient to Jack Bauer. You are leader in name only. Dennis Haysbert was never the star of 24. Now, as far as black writing is concerned, I guess it would depend on what you consider to black writing.
I mean,
so what would you consider
that
to be?
Screenwriting, basically, in terms of media. Screenwriting for TV shows, movies, and fiction. We don't have a lot of black fiction.
Okay, now you're 22 years old. I'm assuming you have your bachelor's in creative writing.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a degree in creative writing. How good of a writer are you?
I think I'm pretty good.
You think you're pretty good. Now, that's what you think. Has somebody else validated your pretty goodness?
My professors. I've been published in a few, like, literary magazines, but they're, like, local.
How much have you sold?
Zero.
Okay. Doesn't sound like the writing thing's going very well. Not beating up on you. I'm saying that you're an adult. Welcome to the cold, cruel world. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. You cannot say I'm a good writer, but nobody has bought my work. Does anybody know John Grisham's first major published book? Okay, let me make it easy for you. A Time to Kill. What was the first book that he wrote that became a bestseller? The Firm. Got made into a movie with Tom Cruise. John Grisham blows up, becomes the hottest writer in America. After that, they wanted to option all of his books, including the first one that everybody had overlooked and ignored. Because A Time to Kill was not a major bestseller. Next thing he knows, they want to pay top dollar to get Time to Kill also. What does that tell you? That tells you that if you don't make any money, you're not a writer. If you don't have the sales and the numbers, you're not a writer. You're trying to become one, but you're not one. In your case, it's even worse, because if you have not put your work out there for public consumption so that people can vote with their dollars, how do you know you're a good writer? Why? Because you handed some people that people solicited work and you gave it to them and they didn't throw it back in your face? Why don't you get some people who did not solicit your work, don't know who you are, why don't you get them to come by? And then we'll find out how good a writer you are. What I'm saying is we got a bad definition there. I want you to get a good definition that will give you answers that you can trust. Right now, the answers you got, those don't even really count as answers because you can't quantify them.
Well, it wasn't even about me writing necessarily. I'm actually going to law school in the fall. It was just more so me just trying to get a different perspective if I'm seeing the same thing that everyone else is, because the black community seems to be just so satiated with the kind of art and writing and media we have. So,
well, here's my thing, I've made some videos. They're on YouTube and whatnot. I've got videos with hundreds of thousands of views. What that means is I put stuff out there and people come to listen to it. I got a proof of concept that what I'm saying can be quantified. Big difference. You don't have to. And that is what gives me the ability to judge other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can take a look at their videos and whatnot, and I'm like, hey, I got videos with 50,000, 80,000, 100,000 plus views. I can judge, and when I see other people whose video counts are below that, I can say, you know what, let me say something to you there. Go take a look at my crowdfunding. People did not contribute because I'm a bad communicator. I've got the numbers to back up what I say. Before you can judge these people, I highly recommend that you have the ability to back it up. Now, what I'm saying is that otherwise, what good did it do you to go to school and spend all that time to get a degree in writing? What did you get it for then?
Exposure. And you need to be a good writer to be a lawyer.
I'm kind of lost there. How does being a writer help you become a lawyer?
Well, it helps you become a better lawyer. Being a
good
reader.
How does being a writer help you become a better lawyer?
In terms of drafting briefs, documents, just the whole legal profession is a lot of writing, a lot of briefs.
Okay, but, I mean, you say creative writing, though. That's like writing fiction. I know lawyers are liars, but I mean, I'm just saying, I don't understand how, I didn't know you had to take a writing class to become a better, quote, lawyer. I'm trying to figure out how that works. Tell me
something. It opens your mind to see different perspectives, analyzing, reading stuff and taking it one way, putting it in another way. So when you're a lawyer and you have different stuff coming at you, different affidavits, if you're at a deposition, you have to be able to not just take the words, but apply them in different kinds of meanings.
I just always thought that was reading for comprehension, but okay. Because what you asked me were questions about screenplays and writing. You didn't ask about the law, so okay, well, I guess you can use it like that. But in any case, the reason that we do not have good black writing is because black people are the people who have allowed the bastard baby makers to tell us that reading is for white folk. And if you cannot read, you cannot write. It seems a little self-explanatory. But if you cannot read at a mastery level, how can you expect to write a story? That's the first thing. If you are always denigrating literacy, how can your children create literature? If you say, if you are opposed to literacy, how do your children make literature? How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first place it begins. The next place it begins is you can't, that we teach our children to be simple-minded, like we're still on the plantation. Keep it simple. The five blocks you were raised in. George R.R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones, was raised in a housing project in New Jersey. That's right. He came from a housing project, too. And look where his housing project took him. But then again, he wasn't raised by a hood rat either. Or at least it wasn't a hood rat. It was a hood rat who taught him literacy. And that this housing project is not all that you are. Black women teach their sons that the housing project is all you are. And then are amazed or upset when their sons end up in jail or everything else, because that's all they want to be. Nobody was encouraging them to be more. So that is why we end up with this juvenile, idiotic stuff. That's how we end up there. We end up there because we have a habit. We have created a culture that is anti-literacy. The mastery of Game of Thrones is that George Martin has crafted a story where the events are not stupid and that they play out the way you would expect it to play out in real life. If you had dragons and giants and magic and a bunch of crazy crap going on. But aside from that, though, it's a story that you can understand that, yeah, this would have happened this way. And that's what shocked people about it on television, was that real life became real life. That Ned Stark didn't get saved in the end. Ned Stark got beheaded. He's a good man. He's an honorable man. He's an innocent man. And he about to die. And that was what happened. And that's the genius of it, is that it bucked the usual trends of television, that you pick a star and you keep the star's character alive until the series is over. Game of Thrones is a purely story-driven television series. It is not character-driven. It's story-driven. Every season, there's a new person in the starring. This season, it was what? What's his name? Peter Dinklage, the midget?
Yeah, Tyrion.
Because that's where the story took them. The rest of y'all got killed off. But you see, that's when you can write a good story. But if you can't read, how are you going to write a story? Now, you mentioned Game of Thrones. I'm sorry, you mentioned Breaking Bad. What is Breaking Bad about? Can you explain to everybody what Breaking Bad is about real quick?
A chemistry teacher, about 50 years old, gets lung cancer, suddenly has a, what I guess can be described as a midlife crisis, kind of putting it lightly, and he decides to sell crystal meth initially to get out of financial hardships, but as it progresses, he changes, he's no longer the character he was at the beginning until he's 100% wrapped up in it, and it so on and so forth.
Now, you've explained the synopsis of it very well. It is about a chemistry teacher who becomes a drug dealer. He didn't start out a drug dealer, but he became one. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how he became a drug dealer. He's a drug dealer. Now, compare the way that they dealt with that white man on that show, and then compare it to the way that black people deal with themselves or on shows like The Wire. Oh, I'm blowing up some people's spots tonight. Compare Breaking Bad to The Wire. Compare Breaking Bad to Menace to Society. Boys in the Hood. Well, you all know the list. Try to compare them if you can. You see, when a white man writes a story about himself and his people, he is not going to come to the table saying that we're dirty, low-down savages who are just doing bad stuff because there's bad stuff that can be done. He wants you to connect with them as people so that you understand that this is what led them to that. When you're black, savages, beasts, housing projects, cannabis, thugs. They don't care if you have a job or not or how you got here. When you are black, you're just a thug. And guess what? That is exactly the way that black people portray themselves. Because our writers see themselves through the eye of white society. So they start from the same standpoint that white people do. That's why the hood stories and hood novels that you get, that's why it's like that. because most black people see themselves through the eyes of white people. And a black person would sooner write a story of a black man going into space than he would of a black man who is upper middle class and in charge of white people, because we consider that to be science fiction. Going into space ain't science fiction. Being in a position more advantageous than white people, that's science fiction to a black person. They've elevated themselves to the levels of gods. And we've accepted that. We have accepted our own inferiority. And now they don't have to make up any more stories anymore. We're doing all the making it up for them. We're doing it all for them now. Now, the answer to this is we need a crop of intelligent black writers. How do you know they're an intelligent black writer? Well, the first thing is, if you see them on television or in the movies, look around to see how many white people brought them to you. If white people brought them to you, he's no good. TBA, how can you say that? I thought you didn't have a problem. I don't have a problem with you working with white people. What I'm saying is, did a white person bring you? Because if they did, that's a problem. Because just like Tyler Perry and Shonda Rhimes, if white people are the ones presenting you to us, that you were discovered by these folk, that's a problem. Because I know that you've already been vetted and that you are going to toe the party line.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we need black writers who build their own vehicles. Tyler Perry was a flawed vehicle to begin with. Good business model, but he was approved by them because it's a flawed vehicle for the obvious reasons. Now we need somebody with some sense. The problem is most black writers, and I will put it at 99%, don't really have the ability to be writing a book. They lack the literary skills to write a book. When we talk about dialogue, most black writers have no idea what dialogue is. Damn sure don't know how to use it. That's why they have conversations, but the conversations play out like porn movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, when you lack basic language skills, you can't read a story, you can't write a story, and you can't even engage in a conversation, much less write one. And that's what bogs them down. Their conversations are not conversations. They are two people saying sentences to each other until it's time to have sex. And it makes no sense. You're like, wow, and when you see it on TV, it's even worse because you're saying, I never would have gotten to bed with anybody with a corny-ass line like that. Well, he doesn't know how to talk about a situation like that. He doesn't know how. On Game of Thrones, you've got very good dialogue about those kind of things. That's why people quote it in places. They will quote lines from Game of Thrones. You can't name one damn black movie anywhere that people will put up as a quote on their Facebook pages or Twitter or anything. Nobody quotes them. There's nothing to quote because there is no thought there. Game of Thrones, when Tyrion Lannister hires Bronn the first time to be his sellsword, and the fight is his champion, and Bronn kills the guy by throwing him out of the moon door. And he falls to his death. And Lysa says, you don't fight with honor. And Bronn looks at her and says, no. Then he points out the moon door where the guy fell. Stuff like that. We don't have stories where we tell things like that. We don't have stories where the dialogue actually tells us about the character. In that moment, you found out what kind of person Braun was. He was a guy who would do whatever it took, and he's here for the money. And that's the kind of line you give when you're there for the money. Had that been a black writer, first of all, the idea of honor never would have come up. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that. The idea of honor never actually would have risen. You see, honor is a cultural concept. Bastard baby makers do not teach their children things like honor. Hell, we don't even teach our daughters honor anymore. That's why the teen pregnancy and bastard baby rate among our females is so high. Words like honor simply do not get used in black society. Wonder how you ended up with dishonorable females, because you do not have a concept of honor. All these Bibles, all these churches, honor ain't nowhere. Hard truth time, kids. This is love. This is tough love. Sometimes love's a pat on the head. Other times it's a fist to the side of the face. And guess what tonight is? Things like that. When I was explaining before about on Breaking Bad, when Cranston's character, I forget what his name is, but when he's at the Home Depot or whatever the hardware store was, and he sees this guy going through there, and he's got all the chemicals that you use to make meth. He's got a bunch of paint thinner, I think it is, and stuff piled up in his cart, 7 and 8 gallons of it.
Mm-hmm,
and he stops him. Doesn't know the guy, but he stops him and says, "No, you don't do it like that. You only buy one at a time. That's, you can make, you're just putting, you might as well put a sign over yourself that says, I'm making meth." And the guy looks at him like he's seen a ghost and leaves out of the store. And Cranston follows him out of the store a few minutes later. The kid goes to this van, and there's this other guy there. And he just walks up to him and he says, "This is my turf. Stay off of it." That's good writing. That is dialogue that makes sense. It's dialogue that you can't wait to quote to somebody else in a real-life situation. Tyler Perry has never said anything in any of his crack cocaine, weed-induced marijuana ravings that they call movies that you would quote to anybody anywhere.
Nope.
If you feel stupid saying it in real life, you would feel even dumber saying it in a movie. And that's why, that's what tells you that you've got to hold a bad writing. Most black writers, their writing is like bad food. Only they don't know it. It's got form and substance, but you really shouldn't consume it. It's not fit for human consumption.
And the thing is, what I've noticed is that white people tend to pull each other up. Like, I would argue, I only read the first Game of Thrones book, but the writing in that wasn't spectacular. The story was spectacular, and then the Game of Thrones producers of the TV show actually lifted it to that level it's at now. Like, as I recall, that line of...
Stop. Whoa. Mm-hmm. I am far from a George R.R. Martin apologist. Now, you just said the writing in the first book was not that good. First of all, for those of you who do not know, I have to throw this little bit of minutia out there. The books are not called Game of Thrones. That's the first thing. The book series is called A Song of Fire and Ice. That's the first thing. Game of Thrones is only one of the books in the Song of Fire and Ice series. But I'm so glad they chose the name Game of Thrones and not A Song of Fire and Ice. That would have been ridiculous. In any case, have you read the first book?
Yes.
Okay. What was the first book about? Because I've never read it.
The first book is essentially the first season of the show.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Chronologically?
Let's see. I read a long time ago.
because I want you to understand something. I got white folks who listen to my broadcast, too, believe it or not. And they will be in my inbox very shortly if what you're saying is not accurate. By the way, there's a Game of Thrones wiki you all go take a look at, by the way. So that's why I'm saying, please make sure that what you are saying is accurate, because there is a reason that I asked you that question.
And I can't say with 100%. From what I remember, it was pretty much the first season, and Rob Stark's narrative wasn't in the book.
Okay, because what you said was that the first book wasn't that good, and the producers of the TV show elevated it.
Well,
now,
I
was
what
you just said. Now, if you want to retract that, this would be time to be doing it.
Not. I didn't mean good in the sense of I didn't like the writing that much, and I didn't appreciate it as much as I did the show.
Okay. Peter Dinklage was asked, had he ever read it when he was on Letterman? And Peter Dinklage said, I started on the first book, and then I just stopped because I just got confused. That was what Dinklage, the midget, said when he was on Letterman. He tried to make it through the first book and just got confused. And I can understand that. There is a metric ton of characters. You really need a smorgasbord to map everybody out. That's what you really need. But in any case, the reason why I'm asking that is because obviously the fans didn't feel the same way.
Well, the story's amazing. Like I said, the whole Song of Fire and Ice, the story is amazing. Like you cannot be grasping. And so I actually saw the show before I read the book, so that's probably why I'm feeling, the way I'm feeling. But had I read the book originally, I probably would have been so engrossed in the story that I would have kept reading. But after I kind of knew the story, the book really didn't add anything extra.
I think it's been 17 years, though, or something like that, 11 or 17 years. It's been a while since he started, so you probably would have. Hell, there are people who were fans and have died since that man started on the books. Not that literally. Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't lived long enough to see the end, so I don't know if I'd tell you that much. But what I will say is that obviously, there were enough people who were willing to put down their damn money over the last decade and some years that somebody out there really, really likes it for just the books themselves. And that was what got it converted into a TV show. Somebody really, really liked it a lot. And what I'm saying is, okay, where's the black contribution?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the black writer who has shown any of us that he can do that? There are no excuses today. There are just no excuses. I mean, I just really mean that literally. There are just really no excuses. People want to make up excuses, but there aren't. You've got no reason for that occurring. None whatsoever. With social media and e-books today, there is no excuse for a black writer saying, I'm unknown. Tariq Nasheed did just fine with Hidden Colors. Didn't need a Hollywood studio. If your work is good and thorough, you will get an audience. Now, Tariq is never going to get a major studio to pick him up. Why? Because he's saying the wrong damn thing from the perspective of white supremacy. So a white supremacist movie studio is not going to pick him up. But then again, at this point, does he really need them? In my opinion, Tariq would be taking a step backwards if he did that. He doesn't really need them at this point. All they would do is want to tamper with the material. Black writers don't get that much attention because their work ain't that good. If we would just be honest with ourselves, their work is not really that good. If it were, we would all know who they were. But it's not. Because just like Game of Thrones, when you find a good story, you stick with it to the end. You give it to your friends. You say, hey, y'all got to read this. But black people do not have an appreciation for it as a customer base. We'd rather have Zane. and black writers do not have the ability to do it. You got a bunch of black writers out there, but nobody who writes on that level. Just a bunch of people saying that they do, and then they have no numbers to back it up. They are legends in their own minds. But they are anonymous at the cash register. If you want a generation of good black writers, this is going to have to come up now because we don't have it. We don't have it. Things like Game of Thrones and, you know, Breaking Bad, although I didn't really like the series, to be told. I mean, I only saw a couple of episodes. Okay, I only saw one episode. Okay, I only saw half of one episode. It's not very engrossed. Hey, I'm the honest authority, okay? Look, I'm sorry. I'd rather have a root canal than sit through another episode of that. I'm sorry. There's long-form storytelling, and then there's slow, torturous storytelling. And guess which one that one was. So.
You only saw one episode, though.
I saw half of one episode, ma'am. Half.
Exactly.
I need to see more?
Yes.
No.
Yes. It's the best show of all time.
I would asphyxiate from boredom. No. The rest of y'all, just knock yourselves out. Break bad, break good, break left, whatever. Y'all just have at it. Same thing for Walking Dead. Bunch of people out there having orgasms over that. I would rather watch midget wrestling than to watch The Walking Dead. I mean that seriously.
The Walking Dead isn't a good show, but Breaking Bad is the best show.
There's a bunch of people who think there's a whole bunch of people who think Walking Dead is an awesome show, and I can see some of the merits in it, but I'm not one of the people. But my point to that is they got validated. There's not a single black writer out there who can get and keep a fan base long enough to get them to validate him. Now, you can't blame that on a TV network, a movie studio, or anything else. Why is it that your own readers will not validate you? Your validation begins with your reader base. They won't do it. I'm going to take a very brief break here. I need to make a quick adjustment with everybody. It's going to take me about a minute to do that, but I'll be right back with you, everybody. You can stay on the line here. I'm going to go ahead and get a caller from 404 next. This is BlackChannel.net Radio. We'll be right back with you and join us. And we're back, brothers and sisters from around the world. Thank you very much here. I just need to make a couple of adjustments here for the BlackChannel.net radio program. While I'm at it here, because I don't want to run out of time here, let me see. I guess I did call him here before. Caller from 404, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
Okay, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Okay, my name is Rebel Without a Pause. That's my Facebook name. But I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois.
All right, what's on your
mind? I just want to say Black first. I was calling, want to continue the conversation. It was kind of fortuitous, actually. Your previous caller being a creative writing major, because I graduated with a degree in creative writing from the University of Illinois. And so I was definitely understanding a lot of what you were saying, because even in my major, there weren't a lot of Black creative writing prospects. And speaking from the vantage, speaking from that perspective, this recalling my experiences in that major, it very much is a all around the whole experience is geared towards white supremacy, because your teachers, they don't really teach you the tricks of learning how to write. You know, when you're in the class, you're writing and you submit peer reviewed work, or you submit work to be peer reviewed. But they don't really teach you techniques to become a better writer, tell better stories, to write better dialogue and things like that. You're basically just supposed to practice and whatnot. And it wasn't until later that I discovered, or I came across these different workshops, different writers, just giving little tidbits of advice about how to write, you know. And most of the tricks are is that you read. You become curious about everything, because a writer has to be everything, because every subject matter spawns from their imagination. You know, so if you're writing science fiction, you have to know a little bit of science. You have to know physics. You have to know biology. You have to know chemistry in order for you to be able to make sense to that audience.
Now, isn't it amazing here? Let me jump in here for just a moment, because now isn't that interesting what you just said? Because this never crosses your mind for Black writers. You will have a Black person who will try to throw their jughead cap in the ring, their jughead crown in the ring, as Dennis Miller once said, to try to write a law story. Okay, you say it's a book about lawyers, and yet they never discuss the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a love story between two lawyers, or two people that you say are lawyers. Now, when you watch a show like Suits, L.A. Law, Practice, you know, these are lawyers. They're talking about the law. They're quoting the law. You let a Black person write a medical show, and they'll do everything except discuss medicine.
Right, now, because the hard part about writing is doing the research.
Well, when you have a TV show like House, they spend, 75% of their time talking about medicine, diseases, what it could possibly be. You put a Black writer in there, it would be
nothing but a soap opera.
Okay, slow down for a moment. It would be nothing but a soap opera. That's all it would be. They would not be doing anything else. And that is why they don't hire Black people. Black people may submit for shows and whatnot, but the first thing I want to ask them is, let me see your synopsis. Let me see it. Why don't you give me a couple of pages of it so we can see what it is that you want to put out there? And let's see how long it takes before the relationship starts. You'll get to that immediately, and the dialogue will be crappy. And that's why they don't get it, because most Black writers, that's all they can do. You remember Jungle Fever, the Wesley Snipes movie? How much architecture did they really discuss?
Not at all, if I can remember.
Now, you talked before
it's
about
been a while since I've seen
science fiction. You said if you're going to write science fiction, you have to know science. You have to know physics.
Right, exactly.
Well, you at least need to know astronomy if you're going to be talking about a space drama. And that's why Octavia Butler has never been considered science fiction by the science fiction community, because her books never actually involve science. Somebody's got their speakers on or something, and it's causing feedback on the line.
You know what? That's my bad. That was me. I had you on speakerphone.
Okay. Octavia Butler has never been considered a science fiction writer by the science fiction community because her books don't actually involve science. Just being in outer space.
Right, it's more or less speculation, yeah.
Yeah, just being in outer space does not make you a science fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
And white folk gave that to her because they wanted to get that monkey off their backs of saying, okay, we acknowledge one of you as a science fiction writer. Octavia Butler was not a science fiction writer. We don't have any. We don't have any. And we don't have any.
Well, you have to go back a long way.
A science book would put them to sleep.
I read one of Octavia Butler's books back in college. And it's like I felt compelled to like it because she is a black author. But truth be told, it was not a good story. It was very boring. It was the one where she travels back in time to her slave counterpart. And so it was a very boring book. But, you know, but the thing about writing, you know, is what I discovered and what I've learned over my years. I graduated back in 2008. And what I've learned in the course of that, I didn't feel I was refined enough to actually try to make a living as a writer. I didn't feel that my skills were there enough. So I took time off. I thought I needed to experience more. I needed to read more. And so in the course of that time, I've done, like, several different things. I've been a boxer. I've worked in various hazardous occupations. I've visited several different places within the United States, several different, you know, from the desert to the mountainous regions, in order to get that experience, because all of that you take in and it comes out in your work. But if you don't have any experiences, if your reading is very limited to certain genres, then your imagination is not going to work because it's not going to know where to go to explore new territory. It's going to be stuck.
You have to have a wide field of knowledge. You can't write a wide, knowledgeable book if you have a narrow scope of knowledge. If all you know about five blocks that you grew up in, how can I expect you to write anything other than the five blocks you grew up in? You haven't even read a book that discusses something other than the five blocks you grew up in.
Correct. Yeah. But the thing is, I believe that black people have a rich history in order to derive stories from. I believe the problem is that we are not, as a collective, we are not interested in those stories. We're interested in very base stories. We're interested in very, just simple concepts of, you know, like the very basic relationships, you know, the booty calls, the affairs, and stuff like that. Like Zane, her story, or like her stories growing up, is like I saw like 7th, 8th graders, girls, like reading Zane stories. I'm just like, and that's all they would read, you know.
And who gave
that was
that
the scope
to?
Of their right, you know. And she has a.
I'm asking a question. But who gave that?
Oh, you talking about that? Most likely their mothers gave it to them.
Now, why is it that
their mothers are reading?
Okay, maybe you're not hearing me so well here, but why is it that their mothers did not? Why is it their mothers, when they chose to read something, that was the best they could come up with? Slut books
is. Right.
All those books
you
have is so hard to find a black writer anyway. You walked past all these other books in Barnes and Nobles to get to this?
Yep. And to me, there's no excuse for that because my mother introduced me to reading. You know, She read to me. I was reading by the time I was 4 years old, and I just had a general curiosity for books. I was reading all the authors, all the major authors. I was reading above my grade level, above my age level, you know. And so, to me, it's a matter of lazy parenting. Because their mind is limited, that they have therefore cursed their children by limiting their minds, limiting their imaginations. Because I was reading novels when I was 8, 9 years old, you know. And they're reading, I wouldn't even consider Zane a novel-sized book. I mean, they're probably only like 150, 200 pages. But just the concepts behind them are very trashy, simple, you know. They're like the trashy romance books. And I think that's the problem.
The concept behind them is porn. Gonzo porn. The point of her books is to get to where she describes sex in them. That's all. That's it.
Right.
That's the only reason you're there. It's not a compelling story. It's not a compelling character. It can't be a compelling character. There is no character development. Therefore, you're not reading it for the characters. You're reading it because somebody put porn to words.
Right.
And that is but then again, 70% of your women are single. So how is it that you are a female and 70% of you are single and you're not in a relationship? Possible. So if they're not in one, they're going to read about one.
You know, parts of me think is that within the black community, within the black neighborhoods, our focus has become so effeminized. You know, it's just we lack curiosity except for the things that bring immediate gratification or things that will attract the opposite sex. We don't seek knowledge for the sake of knowledge's sake. We don't have a curiosity beyond physical pleasures. And it translates into literature, you know, because, you know, what you put on paper, what you put into print, is nothing but an extension of your imagination. You know, for all the secret formulas of it, the most basic foundation is that you're writing, you're placing your imagination on paper, and you're hoping to communicate that to people. You know, you hope to have like a great story, a great idea that you believe that people will want to hear, that people will want to read and share with other people about. And so, if your imagination is limited to just the most basic things in life, you know, as far as like sex and rudimentary activities, then that's going to be the extent of your imagination. You're not going to pull a great American novel out your butt.
Yeah, but what is imagination? Imagination is just another way of saying what I aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
That's all imagination is. And we have become the people who aspire to nothing. And proud of it. We become the people who don't aspire to anything. And that is why somebody can present you books about you and your people as drug dealers and nothing else, and you're cool with that. Because we become the people who aspire to nothing. Do you know that a few weeks ago I posted up a post where I said that, ladies, you shouldn't with a black man who is broke. You shouldn't get with a black man. If he's not in charge of his finances, you'd be a fool to think that he can be in charge of your household. Don't you know that I had about 4 black females who jumped on me for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, because
told me that was wrong to do that.
Yeah, hit dogs holler, you know?
I mean, I said black females.
I mean, they're most likely
there were
they were in relationships.
And I had told them, if you were the black man who is broke, get away from him. Don't let him call you a gold digger because you want a man who understands and has his knowledge of his finances. And there were females who were telling me, no, you don't have to do that. It's rough out here for black men. You know, they need understanding. You know, we live in a white supremacist country, blah, blah, blah. But basically they were sitting up making excuses for having dusty Negroes around.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying. Most likely they have they were relationships with men that you had just described.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You have a choice who you're in a relationship with.
You do.
So why are you choosing, and as females, they have way more choices than men do. Why are you choosing this? And you're choosing this because low expectations are easy to get. Go ahead.
You kind of said that at the end, but, it's fear. It's fear. You don't want to be disappointed, so, bring the disappointment to you because you know it's going to come without it just blindsiding you. That's all it is, really.
What?
Because, how many black males, black males to look up to can black females, how many black males can we look up to as black females? That doesn't end in some sort of disappointment. So we bring the disappointment to us before it can blindside us.
Yeah, but once again, that comes back to low expectations of your life. You don't aspire to anything. Because you are going to attract someone. You are going to desire to have someone around you who is like yourself. I am a disappointment. Therefore, I roll with other disappointments.
If I can interject for a moment.
Go ahead.
I think it's also about control as well, because I've seen and I've talked to females who date men that they know they don't belong with because they can control them. If they're bringing in the finances, if he's living in her house, if she's basically giving him an allowance, right? He's getting money from her. She controls him to an extent in her mind, because if you notice, I've noticed between relationships, the interaction between black men and women in relationships that black females tend to believe that they can control black males, they'll act in an aggressive manner, shouting down, even being playfully, physically, aggressive, among other things. So it tends to be a situation where she wants to establish control. So either he won't leave her, so she has a fear of being alone, or B, he won't cheat on her, so, she wants to control how far he can go. That's my opinion based on my observation.
But the thing is, regardless of her motivations for doing it, motives can't count to an extent, but regardless of your motives, you shouldn't have people around you who don't aspire to anything. And that begins with you in your life. Mm-hmm. What do you aspire to? Because when you aspire to something, you're not going to have a bunch of deadbeats hanging off of you. If you aspire to something, that means that the people around you need to aspire to something too. And we got a situation right now where that lack of imagination is a result of, well, guess what? Only a few of us in here only actually have any aspirations. That's why your imagination leave your neighborhood. It didn't leave your neighborhood because you never aspired to something better.
I believe that people aspire, but their aspirations, their ambitions are very basic. For instance, when Jordan released his new shoes, I believe late last month, I can't remember exactly when, there were multiple conversations going on by men and, by young men and young women alike about their desire to get these shoes, their desire to stand in line for hours on end to get these shoes, their lamentations when they didn't get it, their regret, oh man, somebody else has them and they don't.
The issue with though is that that's not an aspiration. Food, shelter, clothing, those are basic human needs. And we have elevated basic bodily functions like wearing clothes and having sex. Those are body functions. And we have become people of such low expectations that we have elevated those things beyond just being a basic body function. That's how we are, is that we think that there's something miraculous and supernatural, something outrageously extraordinary about having sex and wearing a pair of shoes. So the problem is that we have turned something that is not actually an aspiration and deluded ourselves into elevating it to the point of being one, because we don't actually have any accomplishments. If we did, we wouldn't be talking about them in that manner.
Right. It's basic. It's base level materialism, you know, and because the imagination and aspirations, those things are usually reserved for contemplating the abstract, contemplating higher thoughts, pondering exercises and just mental exercises. You know, you contemplate things that could be, things that could never be, but the thing is that you contemplate and you're stretching your mind, you know, into the unknown, you know. And so, but when your thoughts are just so grounded in, like I said, you know, basic materialism, you know, just getting overpriced shoes or what some celebrity wore at an award show, you know, then it's like you've placed an anchor on your mind, you know, and therefore it places an anchor on the rest of you.
Well, I mean, you've got George Martin and J.R.R. Tolkien writing about white people as kings. Meanwhile, black people discuss a pair of shoes.
Right, but their stories, I mean, as much as they write about, you know, European medieval or fantasy, their stories are just rehashes of mythology, you know, basic mythology, you know, basic archetypes. You know, so they're not so ingenious as far as, like, their story concepts. Now, the dialogue, as far as the show is concerned, I believe is good. But that's also, you know, that's a combination of writers and the original author.
You're kind of
losing. I mean, I wouldn't give them. Am I cutting out?
No, I say you're kind of losing me with what you're saying. I'm not understanding what you mean.
Oh. Well, what I'm saying is that, you know,
saying that those are basic archetypes. Game of Thrones, you see a basic archetype there of mythology. I'd like to find out what that is.
I mean, if you go into any major story, you have your basic archetypes of characters. You know,
I think Game of Thrones has kind of defied that too, because on Game of Thrones there are genuinely good people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that people like about it. It actually defies basic archetypes, because there are no, on most television and writing, in most literature, you have a basic archetype of good versus evil. On Game of Thrones, we don't actually have that. You've got people who at times act less craven than others, but you don't actually have good versus evil. Now, Lord of the Rings, you got good versus evil. Bilbo Baggins, the rest of them, they are genuinely good people who give you the shirt off their back. There isn't really anybody on Game of Thrones who would be really that eager to give you the shirt off their back. To be totally honest with you, there's nobody that you could really say that about in any other way. Everybody,
they killed him the first season. Rob Stark. I mean, not Rob Stark. Ned Stark.
Ned Stark.
Genuinely good character.
Okay, brother. Ned was not a genuinely good character either.
You don't think so?
It's not a matter of thought. Maybe you all need to...
I mean, he had a...
Maybe you all need to actually go take a look at George Martin and see what he has to say about his own books and his own characters.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people need to actually consult the source. If you're going to talk about mythology and whatnot, maybe we should consult the source and see what the source has to say about his own writing. Why don't we start there? For anybody who saw the first season of Game of Thrones, what did you get introduced to Ned Stark doing?
He was executing a young man for...
For desertion,
right.
Even though the young man was trying to tell him what?
that he saw White Walkers.
So, is this, and by the way, when Ned, and what was the next thing that you met? The next person that you meet is Rob Snow. And Rob Snow is what?
Bastard.
Ned Stark's bastard from the war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A genuinely good person? Not on, I mean, well, I think what you say is that he is good relative to Tywin Lannister and Stannis Baratheon? Well, yeah, compared to them. Yeah, if we're going to use them as the yardstick of morality, well, yeah, he's better than them. But you're cutting somebody's head off and saying that you want your children to watch because this is what will be required of them, and what do they grow up to do? His son does what?
Well, he starts the war.
Okay, but Robb Stark winds up doing what? The same thing. I'm the prince, so I'm the one who should swing the sword. Well, who taught him to do that? His daddy.
Right.
And ultimately what winds up happening to Ned Stark. So Ned was not, if we take a look at the actual events, no, this is not if you compare him to the characters Lord of the Rings, this is not a genuinely altruistic person. No. If you were an innocent man, all I can say is based on the first 30 minutes of the first Game of Thrones episode, if you were an innocent man and you were on trial for your life, would you want Ned Stark to be the judge based on the first 30 minutes of the first episode?
Describe innocence. Innocence of what?
Okay, that's my point right there. So what you're saying is,
I mean, yeah.
What am I coming to the table with to prove my innocence? Yeah, doesn't sound like you.
Well, because
trust him
because think about it. When he executed the deserter, you know, he said he saw White Walkers. White Walkers at that time were just a rumor. Many had considered them a ghost story. You know, even though they had, they had the wall there. And
yeah,
so,
but that's not my point, though. But that's not my point. My point is that a genuinely altruistic person would have at least heard out. Ned did not do that because he was having a bad day. Did that because it is their duty with the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That you do not leave the wall. That was the only reason that he did it, was because that was you're supposed to do with anybody who leaves the wall. He was following instructions.
Right, but if we were to look at Ned's character alignment based on, like, the old D&D game, right, you know, he would be a lawful good character.
If your comparison is going to be outside Game of Thrones, yeah. Then again, if it's outside of Game of Thrones, Tywin Lannister is a genuinely good character, if you're going to leave the world of Game of Thrones. But if you don't, if you stay in their world, he's a few degrees off the center of everybody else.